Welcome to Mill Liberty, the voice of liberty for a new generation.
All right, Joe Walsh,
Matt Kibbe,
John Stossel, welcome to Mill Liberty.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Hey, Caleb, I mean this. It's great to be with you. Thank you for the invite.
This week, we are going to be going over the myths and realities that surround monopolies. Teddy Roosevelt hated small government. The gateway into space will help alleviate a lot of this problem.
It was a fateful error we took 100 years ago with this kind of monopolization of banking and centralization of money and credit.
Automation, streamlined productivity, and cost effectiveness.
There's two big government parties, and one of them is red and one of them is blue.
We are creating a community of liberty lovers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Mill Liberty Podcast. I am your host, Caleb Franz. This is the voice of liberty for a new generation, and we are thrilled to have you here today. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of our audience, being a part of our community of liberty lovers. It really means the world to me, and it would really mean it a lot more if you happen to subscribe to us on iTunes, so that way you'll never miss an episode or an update. And then if you really love what we're doing, go check us out on Patreon, because I think we have some cool things there, some things on the pipes that I think you'll like. And if you want to spread the good word and get the word out, just be sure to share the episode. Every episode that we do, try to share, you know, as many as you feel free to, because that is going to help us grow tremendously. Now, with that being said, I do want to talk about this week's program, because it is going to be a little different, a little bit of a throwback into some of the older interview styles or types of interviews that we would do, because this week, and I think I want to start doing this about once a month. What I want to start doing is to introduce you. I guess the point of this program, as I have mentioned many times before, is to build this community of liberty lovers, first and foremost. And how that may be accomplished is through discussion, through debate, through dialogue. But also, I want to provide to you, and I want to bring to you, the new faces and the new voices of people doing really awesome and really incredible work for the cause of liberty. That may be in the state house, in whatever state that they are in. That may be in an activism role. That may be someone who's a rising media star. There's so many different directions that could go, but I really want to put a priority and a preference and just have a one-on-one sit down where I sit down and have a conversation with a bunch of different people who I know for a fact that in 10, 15 years, maybe even less than that, these people will be the ones who are making the headlines, who are, they're going to be the ones who will be, everyone will be gravitating towards, essentially, and seeking for their opinion on liberty issues, liberty-friendly issues. So we're going to start to do that this week. One, because I think this is a really good goal, and it kind of gets back to some of those original interviews that we did. And also next week, just to give you a heads up, we're not going to have an episode because it will be Thanksgiving next Thursday. Sometimes we have an episode on Thanksgiving. Most of the time we don't, though. So next week we will not have an episode, and we'll kick things back up on in December. But we will have a Mill Liberty Unregulated episode next week, so you will be able to, if you're on the Patreon, you will be able to check that out and be sure to join our Patreon in some capacity, so that way you can listen to that program as well if you're really itching for another episode of the Mill Liberty Podcast. So with that being said, this week we're going to start doing that, and this week my guest is state representative out of South Carolina, Stuart Jones. Now, Stuart Jones is a really nice guy, a really friendly guy, and he's somebody who is really passionate about these ideas, really passionate about the ideas of liberty, and I really think he is going to be someone who is... He's going to be a name that you're going to be seeing a lot more, and that's sort of my intention with a lot of these styles of interviews, is that you'll be seeing a lot more of these names in the very near future, because these are all people who are completely committed to the ideas of liberty. They're all people who are not afraid to stick their neck out, and they are not afraid to stand boldly for these ideas and really drive home and communicate these ideas in a way that makes sense to so many people, buck the establishment, and so many other things that just make Stewart and people like him such a rare breed in politics. So I want to leave it there and sort of just let the interview speak for itself. So without further ado, please enjoy my interview with South Carolina State Representative Stewart Jones. Okay, Stewart, welcome to the Miliberty Podcast. It is a true pleasure to have you on. I've heard nothing but great things about you, so it's a really good opportunity to meet with you and to talk with you for the first time here, and it's good to have you on board.
Thank you, Caleb. So great to be here with you today.
So, for those who don't know about you or your background or why you care about the ideas of liberty, why don't we start out by just giving us sort of a brief introduction to yourself? You know, who are you? Why do you care about these ideas, and what are you trying to do about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm Stewart Jones. I'm a small business owner, and I'm a husband, father, and Christian. And growing up, I think the number one thing that got me involved in the liberty movement, luckily, I have a great family and my grandfathers and just family members that really influenced me growing up. Everything going from the Second Amendment to sound money issues and constitutionality of everything pretty much that we're dealing with today. And so I think that's the number one foundation. What really got me engaged and kind of sparked, I'd say it sparked me to get active, was during the Obama administration, the 2012 indefinite detention provisions of the 2012 NDAA. When that happened, I went from being somebody who had studied these ideas and kind of knew about, you know, the history of our country and sound money, monetary policy and that kind of stuff, to somebody that had to step in and get engaged to stand up for due process.
So in your time, how long have you been in the legislature in South Carolina currently?
So I was actually sworn in April 23rd. So I've been in since April 2019
in the South Carolina.
Yes,
this year.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So that's a lot closer then.
Prior to that, though, what I did after I got engaged with the indefinite detention stuff, I was going around talking with city councils, county councils, municipalities about standing up for due process, having a constitutional sheriff, and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I ran for local office, and I represented a District 4 of Lawrence County, South Carolina, from 2014 till 2019. And so that's what I did during that time, and I was able to pass a few ordinances at the local level that really helped stand up for due process and constitutional liberty.
Mm-hmm. So there's like a handful of you all just sort of splattered across the country that I've noticed that are there these really, you know, big liberty folks in on the state level. They maybe not necessarily have the national notoriety that some congressmen or senator might, but definitely doing just as important things. And one of the things that you did, most people in your position, I would say, would probably have a very safe, you know, first few terms in office. But that's not exactly what you did. You kind of came out the gate swinging with a letter. Is that correct? To the president about red flag laws.
Yes. Yeah. I've just been very surprised and very pleased, honestly, at kind of what has come out of that mm-hmm. letter. So after Ohio and the shootings in Ohio and Texas, you know, politicians started once again just beating this drum saying we've got to do something. And I got really worried. And so we've got a strong group of liberty-minded legislators in the South Carolina House. And I got with them first and we worked on this letter. And South Dakota they did a letter early August. They were the first state that sent a letter. And so we kind of took some of the things from their letter, but we did a lot of research and just gathered all the data. You know, there's FBI statistics. There's all these great statistics that really help our points. And so we included all that in the letter. And when we sent the letter, I was very, very pleased. We had 39 co-signers from the House and the Senate in South Carolina. And at this point, we've actually gotten 43 state legislators have signed on to the letter. So we're still actually collecting signatures. But yeah, this letter went to President Trump, went to Senator Graham. It went to our South Carolina federal delegation and told them, you know, the dangers of these red flag laws. It expressed our concerns with gun-free zones mm-hmm. and all the data. There's a lot to it, and we can get into that. But basically what it comes down to is that the media is pushing this narrative. Every time there's a tragedy, they sensationalize on it. And people actually, the perception that people have is that violent crime is going up and that the world is getting more dangerous and all these things.
Right.
When in actuality, it's actually the opposite. The FBI statistics show us that for the 27th year in a row, violent crime decreased. And the places where you really have some problems, if you look at it, are like Chicago, California. You know, there's documented incidents of these red flag laws in states that have used them. And it just shows that they're ineffective. And of course, they're unconstitutional.
So when you put your name onto this, did it sort of make you nervous and I guess, the repercussions from the Republican establishment that you're sort of going against the will of, you know, the powers that be? Or was that just something that you're like, well, you know, what happens, happens?
Well, and that's the thing that I've reminded myself through the years, and I've been in a lot of, even in the county level, mm-hmm. local government level, you would be in these meetings and you would be the only person that was concerned with the ideas of liberty, with due process, with constitutionality. And I mean, literally people would laugh at you. Mm-hmm. And the thing I always remind myself, Deuteronomy 31:6, you know, calls on us to be strong and courageous. And ultimately, I have a family. I have two children and a wife, and I'm doing this for their future. I'm doing this for the future of America. And that far outweighs any kind of fear that I might have.
Mm-hmm. Have you been, you know, I don't want to put, you know, words in your mouth or anything, but I can speak for myself in saying that I think the Second Amendment has been an issue where the president and Republicans in Congress have been incredibly poor on since the 2016 election. And a lot of people, I think, want to kind of gloss over that or pretend like that's not the case. Do you agree with that? Is that something that you've noticed? And is that why, one of the reasons why you wanted to sort of put your name behind this to say, like, no, we need to stand firm in our commitment to the Second Amendment?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And that, unfortunately, you know, politicians, there's only one, and I would call him a statesman, but there's only one person that I could say, you know, that guy never disappointed me, and that's Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. And so I don't expect, I think President Trump's doing a great job in some areas, but I think, like a lot of times and a lot of politicians, they've got their finger in the wind, you know?
Right.
And so they're looking at polling, they're looking at all these kind of things, and they're letting that guide their decision, whereas the Constitution and the foundations of liberty should guide their decision, you know? But
right.
Even the poll, when you look at stuff like that, and one thing we brought up in the letter is that with the perception, you know, because there has been a large, we've seen these polls go out there that say, oh, you know, 70% are in favor of red flag. And I think there was one that said 56% of Republicans were for stricter gun controls and this kind of stuff. But what it is the media has pushed, and President Trump knows this, that the media has pushed this narrative out there of lies. And they're really altering the perception that people have when they do these polls, you know. So that's
something. And that's the case with almost every issue, too.
Right. Yep.
They always phrase it in a certain way to where it's like, well, no, I'm not technically against this. They do this a lot with abortion, I've noticed as well. They'll phrase it in such a way that will technically give them a point on their side that they're looking for, but is just completely out of context.
That's right. That's right. And a lot of it too, I mean, with the red flag laws in particular, so there's 17 states that currently have red flag laws, and then every other state has some kind of mental adjudication process that basically if someone's deemed a mental defective by the state, you know, there's laws on the books where they're not supposed to have a firearm, you're not supposed to sell mm-hmm. them firearms and stuff like that. So essentially, the red flag laws, what they do is they give the government another upper hand on the situation, and they basically say if they are suspicious of you committing a crime, or if you make a comment that's out of line and somebody reports it, it's a whole another level of government control, and we should be going the opposite way. I think more freedom is the solution.
Yeah, I think it's quite literally the slippery slope argument kind of amplified to its greatest extent. So let's switch gears a little bit from firearms. And I kind of want to ask you, because I must admit I'm not quite in tune with all the going-ons in South Carolina politics. I'm from Ohio, so... you know, a lot of the we had a lot of the red flag law discussions as well here very recently. But what is, because, you know, whenever I think of South Carolina, I think of you have these really great constitutional conservatives, liberty Republicans, and then you have your Lindsey Graham types that are very neoconservative, or just, you know, see the Constitution as like maybe a guideline rather than these are the rules. Have you noticed that there's been a growing liberty trend in your state, or has that been more of an uphill battle for you?
I think, well, both. Yeah, it is an uphill battle, unfortunately, because, and the thing there with the Lindsey Graham, the rhinos mm-hmm. in Lindsey Graham's camp, is that there's these progressive, some of them were part of the Democratic Party for a long time, and then they switched parties, you know, once they realized they couldn't get elected anymore with a D by their name. So there's a lot of the people, unfortunately, in the Republican Party, you know, are rhinos, essentially. And so that's kind of the dynamic, because we are a red state. But sometimes it's very difficult to get all the or a majority of the Republican legislators to stand up and say, you know, we're completely, you know, we're for constitutional carry. Just mm-hmm. as an example, constitutional carry has been a battle now in our state for 5 years. And just this last year, we had, this year, I was actually on the floor for the last 2 weeks of session. And we forced a vote on constitutional carry. We got 47 voted yes, 52 voted no. And that's like doubled our numbers compared to the previous votes. So we're going to pass constitutional carry, but yeah, it's an uphill battle, and there's people that have hijacked the Republican Party is basically what's happened.
Mm-hmm. So I've been somewhat optimistic as of late. I see that, yes, you know, obviously the powers that be, and whether it be in Washington and in your state government or even in your local government, it's always going to be a hassle to try to get people to be convinced that liberty is the best method and the best alternative, even though it can be scary sometimes. But I've been optimistic in that I think the trend is very much going in the right direction, and I see a lot of those types of people that you have just mentioned, you know, the rhinos or the Lindsey Graham types of the world, they're starting to play a little bit of defense, and which is something that I haven't really seen before. And now, granted, I'm fairly young, and this, you know, very well could have been the case before my time, but that's, at least in my experience, growing up during the Bush years and the Obama years, this is, it's somewhat of a nice, it's a nice switch for once to finally at least be somewhat on a more equal or level playing field and having people take these ideas of liberty a little bit more seriously.
No, yeah, absolutely, and I can totally see that. One thing that's kind of jumped out at me is that I've actually heard, you know, Lindsey Graham using some of our language. You know, and it could be the whole thing with Kavanaugh that happened with, you know, with Kavanaugh, but it, the whole situation just, it boggles my mind, because here we have somebody, you know, and this is what I got really upset about with Lindsey Graham, is that he was willing to partner with Barack Obama, on things like indefinite detention for the NDAA, increasing the power of the FISA courts, giving them more control, you know, the Patriot Act, the wiretapping, all of those things. And then it comes to the situation with Kavanaugh, and all of a sudden, you know, due process is an issue. You know what I'm saying?
And right. So, that's funny how the tables have turned in that in that situation.
Yep. And you question the sincerity of, are we really, are these people really taking, you know, are they changing their minds about these things, or is it just political? Yeah. You know, what they're doing, is it just, they're seeing that things are changing and that we're actually winning on so many levels, and that they have to at least acknowledge what we're doing. So
you have had a few bills recently proposed, I believe is what you said. Do you care to go over some of those and what some of those are about?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So number one, it's the Second Amendment Preservation Act for South Carolina. And that bill in particular, it's going to prohibit the funding and, any kind of enforcement that the federal government, or state government, it stops our resources from being used for enforcing red flag gun confiscation. And one more quick note on that. I mean, our letter has, it was very effective. Like, we received calls from the White House. We're actually in discussion right now with the White House. And so we've had some very positive things happen from that. It influenced, you know, their discussion. You saw them back off of, at this point, what they're saying now is that they're going to push grant funding to states to push their own red flag laws. They're not going to push a federal red flag law, you know? So, right. So that was very effective. So what this bill does, is it actually, and I think that's 4704 is that bill number. It's going to, block and prohibit that funding. It's going to stop the red flag laws from being pushed in, South Carolina. And there's other states. I attended a conference this past weekend with 50 other legislators from around the country, liberty-minded legislators. And so they're actually taking that bill as well, and they're duplicating it. Oklahoma's done it. They've introduced it. And so, we're just building momentum. But I'd say that's the most pressing bill right now. That's number one. And then I've also got some other bills dealing with gold and silver legal tender, getting back to, you know, the federal deficit, what's going on in our country, and the ultimate collapse of the dollar that we're inevitably, it's going to happen at some point. So what I'm trying to do is encourage and allow people to use gold and silver once again, as the Constitution, you know, as it outlined, you know. So that's another bill that I've introduced. There's also, I've got a few other constitutional bills that I'm working on, and we'll have some more pre-file coming up here. December 11th is the next pre-file date for South Carolina, so we'll have some more stuff coming up.
So is, you know, a lot of the issues that you've touched on, I think a lot of constitutional conservatives or liberty Republicans can get behind. Have there been any issues that you've sort of tried to reach across the aisle in a bipartisan fashion, say, like with, for example, criminal justice reform or some civil liberties that have taken a particular interest of people in your state?
Yeah. So one other bill that that I've introduced as of yesterday is the Defend the Guard bill. And it is a bill that would basically, once again, under the Constitution, return to bringing our constitutional war, you know. So basically it calls for bringing our troops home and taking care of our veterans and questioning the whole idea, this whole notion that we've been going around the world for so long. And you look at some of the effects that it's had on our veterans. In the past 10 years, over 60,000 veterans have committed suicide. There's a homeless epidemic with our veterans right now. And so they've paid this incredible price for being a part of this, you know. And so what the Defend the Guard does is it calls for returning troops home and defending our veterans once again. So that's one I think there's bipartisan support on. There's also I know there's bipartisan support on biometric camera, basically public biometric cameras capturing people's faces and basically due process concerns and things like that. There's also medical marijuana is another one. I know there's bipartisan support on, and that's something we're pushing for also in South Carolina.
The Defend the Guard Act, that's something that I believe was Pat McGeehan in West Virginia. He first proposed that. Is that sound about right?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that I thought was a fantastic, honestly, a bit of a no-brainer when you think about it, that, you know, this is something that the states very much have an authority and a say in doing so. They just have to sort of reclaim it, and not a whole lot of people think about it. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on and keep an eye out for. So let's talk about for you, what is it that was the one issue, I suppose, that really it got you. Got you really interested. I know you said the NDAA and everything like that was sort of what got you activated. But what got you interested in the first place? Because I know, like, for example, with Thomas Massey, he will constantly talk about how, you know, it was the Second Amendment, it was gun rights that really got his foot in the water, so to speak, with the political process. And now he's a congressman and a great liberty. A great liberty candidate. So what was that issue for you that really sort of stoked your interest and opened your eyes to liberty?
Well, and it's kind of interesting, I think, how it came about that foreign policy, I would say, okay. That issue. Going back a little bit, my grandpa growing up, he was drafted into the Korean conflict. And so growing up, I heard a lot of his war stories, and he always talked about the constitutionality of wars. And, you know, being a kid, I didn't really understand until later on. You know, I was 18 on 9/11, and I didn't really understand what he was talking about, you know, until later on in life. And then when I started seeing what we were doing, and we've been in this war now, you know, over in the Middle East now for 19 years, it really plays a toll on people, and you start to question, you know, basically those original, what the founders talked about, you know, with going to war, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, there's a lot of their letters, information where they talked about how that should be guarded, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'd say that's the biggest issue, because it's affected, so many people, my age at least, and we're still over there today. So, that's number one.
Yeah. I think that's something that certainly for a lot of people, and in more of a right of center camp, I think that's something that has been getting significantly better on. It's been getting a lot easier to sort of talk about, because we're no longer in the days to where it's almost blasphemous to even suggest that the wars are either too long or too expensive. Yes. Or too costly in some capacity. And I think that's very much a good thing. And it's, you know, because of examples like that, that it makes it a lot easier. Is there an issue on, I guess, the flip side of that? Is there an issue that you may have had a different opinion on, or a different idea about originally, and then you've really sort of shifted your position on today to a more liberty consistent position?
Well, and funny enough, I would say foreign policy.
Oh, really?
Just because, yeah. And I mean, one of the first, I think the first president I actually got to vote for was George W. Bush. Mm. And I would say that was something initially. I was never like a neocon, like, you know, like let's like wanted to go to war or anything like that. But
right.
But I definitely, that's something that it amazed me through the years, you know, just studying, you know, the history of our non-interventionist policy, you know, that kind of stuff in the United States, and the founders' principles on that, and things that my grandfather taught me. He was hit with white phosphorus when he was over in Korea. And so, you know, it just I would say that has been, that's been an issue where it was difficult at times, I think, to kind of, because you question, you know, am I going against America, you right. know, by
nobody wants to be a traitor.
Exactly.
But yeah. Everyone wants exactly. to be a patriot. Right.
Yes. Yeah. By questioning what we're doing over there. But I'm so thankful, you know, and I realize it's not perfect, but I'm so thankful that we've been able to get the remains of our troops back from North Korea, and that mm-hmm. we're opening up some dialogue. And that's a far better path to take than just being in this constant state of war and saying we're gonna be over there for another, you know, for 1,000 years, you know, and this kind of thing. It's so.
Well, Stuart, I think we're starting to wind down on time here, but I really do appreciate you coming on board to the program today. I think this has been really informative, and I think more people should definitely look into you and, you know, your candidacy in the future, you know, in the direction that you may go, because I think you're a really great liberty person that has a lot of potential in the future. So before we dip out here, can you please maybe plug anything that you have that you want people to go check out and either, you know, follow you on social media, or any of your work that you have that you want people to pay attention to?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me today, Caleb. It's been a pleasure. Anybody who wants to keep up, go to runforliberty.com is my website, runforliberty.com. My Twitter is Jones4Liberty. It's the number 4, Jones4Liberty. And those are the best ways to keep up with me.
All right. Well, Stuart, thanks again. I really appreciate it. And we'll have to have you on again at some point in the future, and keep us up to date on all that's going on in South Carolina and beyond.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for us for this week's episode of the Mill Liberty Podcast. Once again, I want to thank Stuart for joining us on this week's program. I really enjoyed speaking with him, and I hope you really enjoyed the interview. So with that being said, next week, like I said in the beginning of the show, we are not going to have a program, but if you are on Patreon, we will be having an episode of Mill Liberty Unregulated at the end of next week after Thanksgiving, I believe. So be on the lookout for that if you are with us on Patreon. If you aren't, you should probably get on to Patreon. And check us out on Twitter, at Mill Liberty. Check me out on Twitter, at Caleb Franz. Check the organization out on Twitter, at Mill Liberty Org. We're on Facebook at the Mill Liberty Initiative. And then, of course, check us out on iTunes so that way you will never miss an episode or an update. And until next time, we'll see you.